Some may know Larry Gross as the long-standing host and artistic director for NPR's Mountain Stage.
There's a spring in the mountain and it flows down to the town.
Others may remember him for his 1976 hit, Junk Food Junkie.
You know I love that organic cooking, I always ask for more. And they call me Mr. Natural, on down to the health food store.
And then there are those who were introduced to his music at a very young age, thanks to Disney.
Turkey in a straw, ha ha ha, turkey in a sea, Bob Frog dance with his mother-in-law, and they all sing a tune called Turkey in a Straw.
From the late 70s to early 90s, Larry recorded classic children's songs for Walt Disney Records, some of which included the recognizable voices of Goofy, Mickey, Winnie the Pooh, and more. I sat down with Larry to talk to him about his Disney past and how it still plays a role in his life today.
So I'm just interested, you worked with Disney in the past.
Yeah, I was on 9 of their CDs, collections. Often I sang and I wrote a bunch of songs for them. I think all in all, 36 of my songs have been recorded on Walt Disney Records.
And how did that begin? Like, how did that relationship begin with Disney?
Well, it started because I knew somebody in their organization, and coincidentally, at that same time, I had a hit song on the radio, which went up to at least number 2 in Los Angeles, is where Disney is located, because once I remember hearing it on the freeway, number 2 on KHJ, Junk Food Junkie. So that was a timely thing, because my friend introduced me, he wasn't the boss, but he introduced me to the boss of Disney Records, saying, maybe we want to do something with this guy. And I was, you know, whatever, I'm happy to talk about that. And I had done stuff with kids when I did my residencies here in West Virginia and elsewhere. So this was around 1976 mm-hmm. when I had the hit song. And he said, well, we got a project that maybe you can try your hand on. We've had some other people try. We don't like what they came up with. And it was a project called Winnie the Pooh for President. That's why I know it's 1976, because it was presidential year, and they were cashing in. It was a project with Sears, and it was a little booklet that had a song, was supposed to have a record with a song, and then it was about how to tell kids how voting works, how you vote. And it was Pooh for President. He was nominated by Piglet, et cetera. So I wrote this song called Pooh for President, and it was nominated for a Grammy that year. It was the best children's record of the year. It didn't win, but it was nominated, so we went to the awards. So that's how I got my start. And after that, because, you know, I was there on the team and it was a successful project, then they call me and I wrote a whole bunch of songs for a collection of little golden books that they put out as book records. And then that led to a series of albums called Disney's Children's Favorites, Volume 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then Disney's Children's Favorites, Volume 1 and 2, and then there were some other ones that I had, lullaby favorites and other things that I contributed. I didn't sing the whole thing, but I contributed some things.
You said you got a Grammy nomination for Winnie the Pooh for President. How did it feel to have a Grammy nomination for that? And you had already released stuff prior, and you didn't have any nominations for, like, say, Junk Food Junkie.
Well, I would have for Junk Food. Funny enough, I would have been nominated for a Grammy, but the year that Junk Food became a big hit, it would have been definitely nominated for Comedy Record of the Year. But we had released it ahead of time privately, and they used the technicality and said, this was released last year, not this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what's kind of crummy, because it would have been nominated. It wouldn't have won either, because Steve Martin had a comedy album that year, so he would have won.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have been nominated for sure, because anytime you have a comedy song that's in the top 10, it's going to get nominated for a Grammy. So that was something. It was still interesting. That it was nominated. Back then, kids' records were not like they are. It was before there was a big boom and kids' records became big money makers. It was still mostly like Disney put out records for kiddies. And then things started changing around that time. And later on, people that were doing records specifically for kids that became kind of pop became more common.
Beyond those, the classic volumes, you also did the Christmas
records,
did,
yeah,
right?
Two records of Christmas songs.
Yeah.
And those were, pretty much traditional songs or fun songs, Jingle Bells, that sort of thing. But it was fun because on those, they would always have children's choruses sing along. And on those, a lot of the characters sing along. So I have this great version of the 12 Days of Christmas with me and Mickey and Goofy and Minnie and all these people chiming in for all the different days. And that was fun, of course. We didn't record that at the same time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, too. So, I mean, all these, you know, Disney characters voiced along with you on these records, but did you ever meet the people that voiced them?
Well, I met Sterling Holloway, who did the Piglet in Winnie the Pooh, and the thing was, I wasn't supposed to sing on that record, but once again, the characters couldn't sing well enough. So I had to be, no, he was, No, he was Pooh, I guess. I'm sorry, take it back. Sterling was Pooh. And somebody, the guy who was supposed to be Piglet, couldn't sing. And he was supposed to sing the wreck the song. He couldn't, so I sang the song too. And then Pooh came in and said, "I accept," or whatever. And so I met Sterling Holloway. But I didn't meet the people that were doing Mickey and Goofy and all that. They would put that on later.
Okay, so basically you recorded your bit, and then I guess you only found out about their voices after the fact or
during
post-production. Yeah.
Yeah, and the same with the children's chorus. I never saw them either, but I would do the basic tracks and sing with the basic tracks. We did a little of that in California, but most of it we did in Nashville, and then they would sweeten it later with the voices and also sound effects and other things.
Like before you started doing the production for Disney, like what were your thoughts on Disney, if anything?
I grew up watching The Wonderful World of Disney on television, and I went to the movies, you know. I mean, I saw Snow White and all those great animated movies as a kid, and I went to Disneyland, I mean, very early in the 50s. I took a trip, my family went out to see Disneyland when it was the new thing.
Ooh.
And that was cool. So, you know, I had like everybody else, I didn't really know the inner workings of Disney or anything else. And then my college friend got a job with Disney, and then he ended up very high in the company, but not when I knew him well. He was just starting out. So I felt pretty much the same way as everybody else. And Disney, you know, you can look at it many ways. It can be the evil empire. It can be, you know, the mothership, or it can be something that's delighted a lot of people. And I know that the children's records that I made, especially volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the Christmas records and some of the book records, I know that they've affected a lot of kids. And I'm not unhappy with those records. I think they're good records, and they include a lot of songs that kids don't learn in school anymore. And I think they're good to know. I mean, like every kid should know Susanna. There's a lot of songs that every kid should know, and they don't always hear them anymore in school. So it's good that, and a lot of them are just plain folk songs. And some of them I brought to them, you know, like a Dog Named Blue. And we recorded that song. It's a song I used to sing a long time ago. And there's just, they're Disney-ized. They're not the funky folk editions of it, but they're still good songs, and they don't drive you nuts. I still have people now tell me today, and this is, made those first records in 78 after Winnie the Pooh. So what is that, however many years ago? You know,
40?
Almost 40
yeah.
years ago. And there are still people today that tell me, I mean, people in their 20s who have children that tell me those are the only records they can stand to listen to. Because, you know, kids listen to everything 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
So if you hate it, it's going to be rough. So hopefully it's something that you don't hate. I mean, you can deal with it. You can at least put up with it.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's a testament to your, you know, singing ability on the records, is that you make it enjoyable for adults and kids alike. Because if it was someone else, then they'd probably be like, well, whatever. Like, imagine nowadays if, like, Miley Cyrus or,
yeah.
you know, someone like that were to yeah. do it, people just zone out.
Or if people do it too sickly sweet and cute, mm-hmm. you know, we try to sing it fairly straight, obviously with a smile in your voice, but not now kiddies. You know, I never think of kids as being a different kind of audience. I mean, they're just an audience that these are good songs. And that's the main thing was these are really good and timeless songs. There's mm-hmm. a reason why they've been around for 200 years. And the people recording them, the musicians, also had a really good time because they never get a chance to record She'll Be Coming Round the Mountain and, you know, the Wabash Cannonball. They like these songs. Everybody knows these songs. Everybody in the sessions knew every song. It wasn't like we had to learn something.
Yeah.
But it was, nobody's going to record them, but because they're not commercially viable, except in this kind of format. So we really did have a fun time. It was not like the people were going, oh, my God, another stupid kid record, you know. It was like we had a nice time in the studio. It was a fun time. It was very quick to do. It wasn't hard work.
You stopped making them around, what, like 1980-something? 90. Okay. Why did it stop there? Like, why hasn't it continued up until
I didn't pursue it. I mean, I didn't. And also, you know, Mountain Stage became a big deal and started taking up my time. And I never really pursued that. It kind of pursued me in the beginning. And one thing led to another. And I could have probably tried to follow it up and try to go that direction. But I knew that I did not want to become a child's artist. That just wasn't. I'm happy to have those records, but that's not what I wanted to spend my time doing. Just the same as I didn't want to become a novelty song artist, so I didn't try to do another 10 Junk Food Junkies. It's just what it happened, and I'm glad it happened. It was a fun thing, but it was not something that I really, really, although it's lucrative. I mean, it certainly pays. I've made religious records too, but I didn't want to become a Christian artist. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not my style. I mean, I like to do a lot of things, and there are other reasons. I mean, they found other people, and the people I worked with moved out of the Disney, and you know, you have to pursue that. If the producer leaves, then you have to see who the new producers are and try to get in with them. And I just didn't. And I was doing this in West Virginia, and my energies were elsewhere. The very last one I think that I did. pretty sure was the Lullaby album, and they asked me. It was a funny story, but it's a true story. I tell it every time I sing this song. That they called up and said, "We're making a Lullaby record. We wanted you to sing on a few of them, and do you have any lullabies yourself?" And of course, I said, "Oh, of course I do. I'll send it to you." When I didn't have any lullabies, but I sat down and wrote one because I thought, "Hey, if this one gets on the record, I know how much money it can make for me." And they accepted, and I really liked the song. It's called Mountain Lullaby. And now the group here, the Appalachian Children's Chorus, have that. That is kind of a theme song, one of their theme songs, which is very sweet. And to hear them sing it is really very nice.
So, of the things that have come out of the record, positive or negative, which one has stuck with you? Has it been like people's reactions to it? Has it been maybe the money aspect of it?
Well, there's two things that are very positive. Matter of fact, there's not really much negative in my opinion, except for the fact that there are people that hate Disney. So if you do anything for Disney, they think you're evil. And then the other part is I never did get stuck with the label of being a kids artist, so that could have been negative, but. The positive parts were they earned money and they continue to earn money. And the second part was, as I said, I know that a lot of kids listen to these songs. I mean, they gave me platinum records and stuff. Most all these records went platinum or double platinum, and they still continue to sell because they can sell them online, so downloads. So they even today, they continue to sell, and I know by the royalties, they sell at about the same rate that they did 10 years ago. I don't have no idea how long this will last or whether it will continue. But it's nice to think you made something almost 40 years ago that somebody still wants to hear today. I like that. And the songs are delightful, and I'm glad that a few of mine were included on there for financial reasons and for the fact I'm proud that to have a song alongside of those classic songs. You know, it's nice. It's a good thing that kids will listen to that, too. And I went on for the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame a few years ago. The fellow who wrote Frosty the Snowman is from West Virginia, and he also wrote Peter Cottontail and so forth. And they asked me to be the person that spoke about him when they inducted him. He was dead, but they posthumously inducted him. So I went on the internet, first of all, because I knew we were going to sing Frosty the Snowman. I said, I got to remember how that goes. And the very first thing I pulled up on YouTube was me singing it on the Disney record, and there were like 2 million hits on it, people that listened. And they wrote comments about this, and it was all about, you know, how fun it was about Frosty, and, you know, they'd seen the cartoon that was everything. And it was, anything that makes you at all see life like a child does is a good thing. And anytime you can delight a child with something that's decent is a good thing. So I'm really grateful for those things.
Oh, that I didn't know that you covered his song, and then I guess you sang it again at the ceremony?
Or? Yeah. Because it's a natural one. That's probably the most famous one. He wrote Smokey the Bear, Peter the Cottontail, and Frosty. But everyone knows Frosty the Snowman.
Yeah.
I mean, people pretty much know the other ones, but Frosty is like, that's a classic tune. So that's nice. Those things are nice to think that there's little kids out there now, 3, 4, 5 years old, listening to these records and thinking, oh, and singing along with them. And that's great.
Have you ever had like an interesting fan experience of someone coming up to you and maybe singing a song?
Yeah, a lot of times. And I've gotten a lot of mail and stuff and people, you know, people that, and then there are people that you know, kind of never grew up. They have problems and so they have mental problems or something and that they could be, you know, 20 years old, but they still act like children. And I've had some of those people come because they listen to my records. But I've heard from a lot of kids. Most of the time, they don't write fan mail because it's not that kind of thing. I wasn't played up. My picture was not on the cover of the records. So, and that's good. I like that much better. I don't want to become although no doubt it can make a lot of money, but it's just not my thing. I must see this guy. You know, I don't like that thing. I really hate all that stuff of the kind of personality cults that go along with everything in stardom, whether it be sports or music or actors or whatever. That's just something I hate. But I do appreciate the fact that some kids have written, you know, saying, I really love these songs and whatever.
Yeah, well, that's cute. And I guess that's a good point, too. I mean, they could have easily made you the face of Disney music if they had, like, put your face on the records.
Yeah, but I wasn't right for that. I was probably too old at that time. Yeah. They probably want to have a younger, better-looking person. And besides, they can put Mickey Mouse on the cover. Who's more famous than him?
That's true.
If I had a choice, I know who I would put on the cover.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, so there's so many Disney characters to choose from. And, of course, you know, there's so many that worked with you on the records. Which one would you say is like your favorite Disney character?
Oh man, Let me think.
And that can go beyond just the typical, like,
Mickey Mouse
stuff.
Well, one of my favorites was Scrooge McDuck. That's, I mean, there's no question of that. The guy swimming in money down in his basement. I mean, that's just, that whole thing was so, so kind of surreal. And the Beagle Boys that were after him and everything. That, I mean, that just was funny.
It's how
just,
can you dive into a lake of coins without getting a
exactly.
concussion?
That's a good, that's all that stuff was just funny as heck, as far as I'm concerned. So I like Scrooge. He was a funny guy, and those cartoons were a little bit surreal. And, you know, you got to like Donald because he was kind of a curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mickey and Minnie were the nice, the perfect citizens.
Yeah.
And then Donald had to be a... And Goofy was just a nut. He was a hillbilly, you know. He was crazy. Yeah. I liked him.
Yeah, he kind of was, actually.
Yeah.
I never really thought of that.
Yeah.
So could you do any of the voices?
No, I can't do any of that. That would have been, I tell you, though, when I did sing also on the Little Golden Books, and so I wrote 36 songs. I don't know how many books there were. There must have been, I didn't write two for every book, so there must have been like 20, over 20 of these books. You know, including the saggy, baggy elephant and, you know, the tawny, scrawny lion and, you know, all these ones. Some of them you've heard of before and some of them, you know.
Oh, I'm sure I
Scruffy
read them.
The Tugboat and all these things. And you've read them. And, and so it was fun because I read them when I was a kid. They've been around for since the 40s, I guess, or who knows when. So it was fun to do that because I would be singing a character sometimes, you know. And matter of fact, some of the songs on the Disney's favorites came from those books. I wrote one called I'm a Policeman. Because that was the name of the book, and another one's called "The Mail Must Go Through" because it was about the mail service, and then one of them was the Saggy Baggy Elephant. What? There's one in there, but I wrote one for Thumbelina, a little song about that, and some sweet little lullaby things for kids. But the guy who did those voices was really funny, and we'd be in there in the studio doing, and I was going to sing, and he was doing that because he could do three or four or five voices or more.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was, if he made a mistake, people had to listen very carefully, because if you ever make a mistake and let it go, I mean, everybody in the country will write in and say, that says the instead of a right there, you know, mm-hmm. So they got to listen closely. But he would always know when he made a mistake. Sometimes he wouldn't stop, but he would keep going and just put profane stuff in. And it was so funny.
See, if you all were ever to do like a 2014 version of that, you should create like an adult version, like Go the Fuck to Sleep, you know, like that book.
Yeah, exactly. It could be like that. It was so funny when you hear that because he would be talking like, and then the elephant said, and then, whoa.
Way down upon the Suwannee River, far, far away. There's where my heart is turning ever. There's where the old folks stay.
Is there any chance now that you would, if Disney were to come up to you and be like, hey, Larry, let's do like a 30th anniversary edition or whatever. Do you think that...
Sure. I'm happy because I like the songs. I'd like to sing. I always like to sing. If they wanted me to sing again, I would do that. And I don't think they'll do that. They've moved on a long way. But you never know. If somebody came up again and wanted me to sing... songs for kids, I'm all for it. The good thing was I didn't have children when I did this, but then later I had children, and my wife and I played these records for them without telling them who it was.
Aww.
And they liked the records, which was really nice. They recognized pretty soon about who it was, but they liked them, which made me feel good because that's, you know, you got a road test. In the end, you hope your own kid is delighted by them.
Yeah. Would you ever consider, I don't know if you have played it on Mountain Stage because 31 years worth of music, but have you ever considered or played any of these songs? Like either like as an intermission kind of thing or a joke?
I'm trying to think if I ever sing anything from on the show. It's possible that I did just as a joke. I can't remember that.
Yeah.
I probably not, but it's not out of the question.
Yeah.
I may have sung some of the ones like I may have done... had an old dog, name was Blue. I did a version of Froggy Went A-Courtin' that the Carpenter Ants and I do in the bar.
Oh.
It's fun. I mean, that's a great song, and we have fun with it.
So looking back at, like, how Disney was then and how it is now, like, how would you...
I don't know how it is now. I haven't worked with them. You know, I don't know how they are now. I mean, they're is always a huge dynasty that does so much and creates so many things, and it's all about... creating icons and selling all the paraphernalia that goes with them. That's what it always is. And I guess it always was. But as they say down there, you know, it all started with a man and a mouse. And sometimes that's the simplest part is the best part. So But I'm open to other things. The songs have been used, as I told you, this recent movie, the Jennifer Garner movie. They used one of the songs from the Disney record there, and I didn't see it. Somebody told me about that. I guess they heard it and saw it in the credits. So I did, If You're Happy and You Know It, clap your hands in that movie.
I wonder how they used it.
I don't know. It's probably in the background.
Yeah,
while
I imagine.
Kids were, you may not even hear it.
Like
you
a
may,
school or
you
something.
You may barely hear it, or it could be on when they go into the kids' room and the kid has got the record player on or whatever, the iPod going or whatever it is, and I don't know, but... They also used my version of the Hokey Pokey from that in Old School with Will Ferrell. And there may be some other ones that I don't even know about because Disney is free to license them and put them where they want to do.
Yeah. I mean, if they were able to do like a Pinocchio song for Avengers in the Avengers trailer, I imagine they could easily do something like that for like, now they own Marvel and they also own Sesame Street and all, or not Sesame Street, Muppets and all that. I imagine they could just go free with all the amount of Larry Gross songs they can put in their stuff.
Yeah. I mean, one thing Disney does better than anybody is that whole marketing of, that's why Sesame Street went to them with the characters because, you know, you go to the best. If you're going to farm it out, you don't farm it out to somebody that's not as good as you.
Mm-hmm.
You farm it out to somebody who does this better than anybody. So that's one of the things they do is sell stuff to adults and kids. And they can do what they want. They own the material. They own the publishing for all these songs that I wrote, which is fine. The more they use them, the more I'm happy with it. And there's been people record them elsewhere. I have records of people from Italy and China and stuff that have recorded these songs. Yeah, that I wrote. Yeah.
They
sent to me. No, nobody that you would know. They're mostly they're kid artists. They're child artists from over there. So I have some from, you know, from these various things. And then they've used them in elsewhere because I see them when she shows up on when you get the royalties, it tells you. But there are people and stuff that I don't know about, TV shows and radio shows and stuff like that elsewhere that I wouldn't know anything about.
Interesting. I never would have guessed that like all these worlds and countries would have come up to you and be like, hey, by the way, you know, really like what you did there. Here's our versions of those songs.
They do it. And they're because people are looking for material always and looking for new material. And then Disney is a natural place for them to look. So, it's nice. It's just the astounding thing is that in 1978 to 1990, you know, if you'd asked me at that time, so what's going to be done with these recordings in 2014, I would say they would be long forgotten.
But that's
not the case.
Yeah, I guess between, you know, streaming and Spotify and just, you know, all this kind of like nostalgia building up, people just love listening to those songs. Like I went on YouTube. I couldn't really find a lot of like the original volumes, but the Christmas ones, like I could find every single track from the Christmas records.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wow. And people were commenting, just like you said. Yeah, it's just they loved it.
And if you know the names of the songs, I mean, I've done that a few times, some that I wrote. Like there's one called Carrot Stew that was from in one of the Golden Books. And there was like 10 or 20,000 hits on this YouTube. Somebody put it up. And then these people talking about, oh, I remember this song when I was a kid, you know. That's kind of cool, really. I mean, it's funny. But that's the one that showed up also in the Silver Burdett third grade series for schools, and I didn't even know that. They used it as an example of the fermata, the bird's eye thing, that how you hold a note. And I was back then going to schools performing every now and then. I went to some school and sang that song, among others, and the kids all sang along. I said, how do you know this song? And they said, it's in our book. And come to find out, Disney hadn't told me, but it was they put it into the Silver Burdett third grade level music instruction book. Now, that's not current now, but it was, I don't know, that was some years ago.
Yeah.
But that's kind of cool to think all these kids in the third grade all around the country who take this series learned that song.
Oh. Well, do you have any last words or like any fun stories you want to bring up before we ended our little conversation about Disney?
No, my experience there was good. It was fun. I realized that, you know, they're very jealous of their trademarks, and you can't mess with Disney at all. If you try to use any of their names or images or anything else, they will come after you. I don't ever have that problem, but I noticed that when I was there, because once, for example, when we did Winnie the Pooh for President, they made us about 2 dozen sweaters, custom-made sweaters with Pooh, that famous illustration of Pooh with the 3 balloons flying.
Yeah, yeah.
And they put that on the front of the sweater, and it was, they had it made by some company, a very limited number, but it was all done through Disney and Sears, legit. Huh. And we did, because when we did this, I remember we went to the Hancock Building, which Sears owned in Chicago, and that's where we launched this with TV cameras and stuff like that. And then later I wore that sweater when I went to a meeting at Disney in Burbank for another thing, for the little Golden Books. And as we walked out of the meeting, this Disney functionary, I never forget this because I was, at that time, what was I, almost 30 years old. I was 27, 8, 9, 30 years old. This guy had the sweater on. And this guy grabbed me when we got away from the other people, and it, like I was a school child. And he looked at the label of my sweater to check that it was a registered Disney product. I thought, wow.
What would he have done if it
that's
wasn't?
A good question.
Like, would he have just, like, ripped it off?
That's a good question. What he would have done if it had been something that I had made myself, I don't know what he would have done. But I thought, man, these people are serious.
Well, I know recently they, Deadmau5, he's a DJ artist who's really big right now.
Yeah.
And he, Deadmau5, as you can guess, has, like, mouse ears.
Yeah.
And Disney recently, in like the last month or so, they basically told him, like, you need to stop infringing on our mouse ear rights. And
yeah.
He was like, I've been doing this for years and you've not said anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
I'd beware if I was him. Yeah. They have a lot of resources with which to enforce their perceived trademark. So,
yeah.
That's the way it works.
You wouldn't want to be wearing his mouse ears right now.
Well, I'd be careful if I were him. I mean, it's obviously you don't want to, you don't want to kowtow to anything, but it's, they are very jealous of their trademarks, and I guess that's the way they got where they are.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, Larry, this has been a wonderful Disney-filled conversation. I thank you so much. And good luck in all your future endeavors, whether they are Disney or not.
And all of you listening to Joni's show, remember, you can get Children's Favorites 1, 2, 3, and 4 on iTunes. As a matter of fact, someone told me the other day, there is a Larry Gross iTunes channel. If you go there,
yeah,
you can mention that. Yeah, and I don't even know because I don't do that. But
yeah.
They told me that there's that if you really want to just listen to my songs and you have kids, there you go.
There you go. Larry all the time. Thanks, Larry.
Yeah.
You can follow Larry Gross and his work with Mountain Stage on mountainstage.org. And you can keep up with me on social media at A Change of Tune. Hear more of Larry Gross's Disney music on this week's Indie Alternative Disney edition of A Change of Tune, airing Saturday night at 10 on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.